Welcome into the program, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a few months, and a little bit has happened in the Boston sports world. We're going to cover as much of it as we can, mostly Patriots tonight, as the Patriots started off their season 0-1. Great performance by Mac Jones. We're going to break that down as well as what else went wrong for the Patriots last Sunday. Preview the Pats Jets coming up as well. Mostly Pats, go on a little bit of a Red Sox tangent. Maybe a quick temperature check on the Celtics and Bruins as well. And then we'll get the hell out of here. But first, sitting to my left is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm great, John. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you very much. And out in the great state of California in his vehicle is Mr. Matthew Kovach. Matt, how are you?
John, I'm doing great. I'm actually scrolling through the Patriots team store trying to figure out if I want a blue or white Mac Jones jersey.
Excellent. And in the Granite State, on a landline, is the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Paul, you were in attendance on Sunday, so we'll let you lead things off here with some of your takeaways from Mac Jones' performance and the Patriots' performance at large.
Well, as we figured out, John, they like to keep it close. I think Belichick had it figured out. It's just that the running back, I guess, isn't prepared to rush the ball over 20 times. He was tired and fumbled the ball at the 8-yard line. It's too bad because Mac Jones played fantastic. They should have scored earlier when Jacoby Myers dropped that easy toss. I mean, they settled for too many field goals. As you saw, there were way too many penalties. So obviously you'll have to clean that up. But I don't think the world ended because you're 0-1. There's a lot of other teams in the same situation. And, get back to 500 after Sunday.
It's a solid take. The penalties killed it for me, Dave. That was horrible because the time of I thought this during the game, and it needed to be mentioned, the time of possession meant absolutely nothing. Just because you held the ball for way longer than the Dolphins did, the Dolphins were more efficient and got more points than you, so who cares that you had the time of possession, the greater time of possession? And a big part of that is Gunner would field a fair catch or take it 15 yards and then it would get backed up because you get some stupid penalty or while you were making a drive, get a stupid penalty and you spent the majority of your time, you'd waste 4 or 5 minutes at a time just trying to get to the point where the punt returner fielded the ball. And so that was infuriating to watch. And Mac's performance was great. I'll definitely get into that later, but I'll hand it off to you, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it was football, Patriots football, that we were not used to in the past of those old-school Belichick coach, Belichick-Brady teams where they're, ultra-disciplined on both sides of the ball. It was very sloppy. Ton of penalties, as you said. Fumbling. It was you outplayed them in every major statistical category of the game. But it was tough. And to echo Paul's point, I mean, Damian Harris was a great college running back, but they had other guys there that are in the NFL with him that split carry. So he's clearly not ready to take on that 20 to 30 carry a game. It's too much for him. So, and that was a tough fumble. Unfortunate. You had the game in your hands and you lost it. But like Paul said, this isn't the end of the world. And we saw, I think, out of all the performances, a great performance out of Mac Jones in this first NFL game. It was awesome. So, a lot of good things.
Definitely. Well said, Dave. Matt, is the season over?
Yeah, wait till next year, John. No, it's not over, but I'm not as, hunky-dory walking out of the game, I think, as everybody else was, or just that sentiment. Couple things. You got run all over again. And I mean, Miami Dolphins are running at will, and it's not Zonka and Kick back there just bulldozing your defensive line. Vince Wilfork is not on this team. Ted Washington is not on this team. They're in some real trouble up front because Miami, again, came in and did what just about every team did to the Patriots last year, which was run all over them. So that's certainly a blueprint for beating this team. Number two, you lost a division game to a team that, really used to beat up on you when you had the greatest quarterback of all time and you were winning Super Bowls and you were the de facto best team in the NFL. I mean, this is a team, obviously, I think in two of the Patriots Super Bowl title years, the Dolphins beat them. So when you lose a game like that on Sunday, a game that you should win in the division, if this is not the, you know, same Patriots that we talked about on the show where two of the other people on this panel said, you know, just go do your 12-4 and call me in the playoffs. That's not that team anymore. You need to win every game. You're going to be in a lot of close games. I mean, the fact that, you know, people are chalking this up as a win down at MetLife this weekend is crazy. I mean, how many close games have you seen the Patriots play there again with Tom Brady at quarterback? So I don't like the loss at all. It was a real bummer in layman's terms. Yeah, just, you know, I just didn't feel good about that. Those are the games that you need to win because invariably there will be a bad Mac game. There's probably going to be a few this year where he looks like a rookie. So when you play really well, you control the ball, you have everything set up for you to win, and it's against a team that's had your number recently, not good.
Paul, how much – good points, man. Paul, how much do you think this has to do with a lot of these players being new – and kind of not being around long enough to get brainwashed into the Belichick way, the Patriot way?
You can make excuses, John. I mean, you know, a guy shoving a guy 20 yards out of bounds, that's just ridiculous. I mean, that 15 yards killed us. John, I was even thinking back to, you know, normally our punter is very good. We're punting for like 40. I mean, punted the ball outside the back of the end zone. I mean, so we gained 20 yards. Well, that's another mistake. Right? That's almost like a penalty in itself. So there was so, John, I bet if you wrote them all down, there were probably 15 things they did wrong.
Yep.
They should have won the game. They're in great shape with Mac Jones. Absolutely great shape. If Matt, I have to change my tune. I've changed it like six times. It was a good loss. That Miami is a decent team. They have a very good coach, I think. Mm-hmm. And you lost. You're going to play a lot of close games. You're not going to win them all. It's not going to happen. I don't know what the record's going to be at the end of the year. You can say 10-7, 11-6, or whatever adds up to 17, but they'll be in the mix. I mean, Buffalo looked terrific, and if you watched any of the Jacksonville game with Trevor Lawrence, my God, that was just torture. So feel good because you have Mac Jones. That's all I'm going with.
Yeah, well said. And I don't quite go to the good loss territory here. I hear your point. Because you just had the game so in hand, and the mistakes absolutely killed us. And to cough up, when you have the rookie quarterback and the rookie quarterback plays well, and you've got one of the best coaches of all time, and you went out and spent all this money, and you're at home, it's a divisional round game, you got to win that game. But I will say this, if you go into New York and beat the Jets, who had a very similar week one to you with a rookie quarterback, if you beat them by two scores, beat them handily, I think, and get some confidence, because after that week, you got a couple of doozies coming up. What do we have, like, for the next? We got, like, Saints, Cowboys, Bucks. Like, you don't want to be digging yourself out of an 0-2 hole going into those three games. Go 1-1, and then if you can somehow go 2-1 in those next three, then we're really talking. So don't start the season 0-2 with two divisional round games. Dave, Trent Brown injury. Definitely hurt us in that game. Anything else that stuck out to you, or that in particular?
I mean, that in the second half was just huge. I mean, the Dolphins' pass rush, their defense in general, very well-coached team, but they don't have a ton of studs on that side of the ball besides the secondary, which is great. But that front set, our offensive line, which is supposed to be the strength of our team, really struggled. And big part of that was Trent Brown, and they brought in Heron. He really struggled. And then they brought in the new guy from the Chiefs. And he did okay, but at the same time, it's a little bit of a concern noting that one offensive lineman, obviously tackle, big position, he's out, and they struggle big time. Mac took a lot of big licks, and, you know, maybe that's good for him down the road, but in his first game, that's not something you want to see your rookie quarterback go through. But the other thing is, I think in the second half, you did get to see your free agent guys. You know, you got more Hunter Henry in the second half. You got Aguilar in the second half.
Two great catches by him.
So it was good to see in that sense, but I think it's just gonna take time for the tight ends to get to this offense, the receivers. It's, you know, it's gonna take some time. But it was good to see in the second half.
Definitely. Cove, I will throw the Gilmore debacle as well as kind of the defense's play in week one. I feel like 17 points doesn't tell the story because, you know, by all accounts, you give up 17 points to a team like Miami. That's pretty good for a defense to hold into that. But in the grand scheme of things, for how little they held the ball, and two, you know, major drives, you just let them, the first drive of the game in particular, they just waltzed right down the field, and then to start the second half, waltzed right down the field, and then when you needed them to make a stop at the end of the game because you were, you know, about to run out of timeouts and you wanted to try and get the ball back, they let them get two first downs, no problem. So, Cove, what kind of sticks out to you here with this defense?
Well, to tell you how much you need to know about Tua Tagovailoa is the Miami Dolphins are actively in contact with the Houston Texans, or have been, trying to figure out what it would take to acquire Deshaun Watson. So that shows you what the Dolphins think about Tagovailoa. Listen, when you watch that game, who said this? I think J.C. Jackson said that, you know, Tua gets in trouble and he'll just bail out and just, you know, kind of heave it up there. That was not a quarterback clinic. And again, when you're talking about Myles Gaskin, you're not talking about Larry Zonker or Jim Kicker. You're not even talking about Mark Higgs when he played for the Dolphins 30 years ago. So you're not getting really destroyed by elite skill player guys where you say, geez, I mean, these guys are, you know, the number one picks in a fantasy draft. They're all pros. They're going to do this to every team. So that's concerning. But if you kind of want to flip it back and talk about the Patriots, the way that we know the Patriots or the way that you've come to know them for 20 years, you know that the defense is always a work in progress, especially at the beginning of the season, and then it starts to gel later. How many times have we seen the Patriots have kind of a Swiss cheese front seven, and then magically after Thanksgiving they're stopping the run again? So I have a little bit of hope going forward, but certainly it was not a great defensive performance, and you know that they spent a lot of money in revamping the defense. I just don't like Matt Patricia coming back at all. I mean, the stench of Matt Patricia coaching on this team, and again, Belichick knows much more than we do, and certainly knows, you want to talk about temperature checks, he knows the temperature of his locker room and his coaching staff, but when you saw Brian Flores coaching the defense, in contrast to Matt Patricia, there was a big difference. Yeah. I mean, Matt Patricia gave that ridiculous interview not that long ago when he started taking credit for Malcolm Butler's pick in the Super Bowl, saying that, you know, I have a pretty famous fourth quarter call on my record as well. So, not a lot to like about the defense. I don't know if it's a thing where Stephon Gilmore's out there and, you know, suddenly things are better, because, again, it's not like you were facing Peyton Manning. But, yeah, not a lot to like about the defense. Very undisciplined. And, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. You would hope that they'd come out and make life miserable for Zach Wilson this week. But, you know, again, wait and see.
Yeah, that's the hope. Paul, any differing of opinions on Matt Patricia?
No. He's like another Chauncey Billups. So I would not brought him back. Not a chance. John, a guy goes for a head coaching job, and then they do a background check on him? Oh, no, he doesn't come back. Get somebody else. No, we just keep making excuses for Belichick, his coaching staff. Go out and get some coaches, right? You can't have your son and everyone else. Get some real coaches out there and stop making excuses. You spent $200 million, $300 million in free agency, and you don't even like free agency. So, you know, let's stop with the tears for Bill Belichick and his coaching staff, right, and move forward. Matt, Patricia, goodbye.
Well said. It seems like Matt and Paul are in agreement there. Let's do a quick round the NFL. I didn't get to watch many of the games, any of the games, really. Dave, any takeaways? Anyone we should be scared about, or your surprise sucked so bad?
Surprise sucked so bad. I always thought Tennessee would be more prepared, just because, you know, Vrabel's a Belichick disciple and his team's always usually really prepared, and Arizona came out and killed them. And same thing with Buffalo. I mean, I think Pittsburgh every year is just going to be tough, and they went into Pittsburgh and won. But I never want to overreact to week one. It's too easy to. But those two games in general just, you know, kind of came right out at me, because those are two teams that lost, you know, as well at home. So that's all I got.
Good stuff. Cove, any quick around the NFL stuff?
Yeah, when I think about Matthew Stafford, I think about Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce is from Inglewood. Matthew Stafford now plays football in Inglewood. And for a decade, they were each incredibly talented guys on morbidly bad teams. Paul Pierce, he went to the Hall of Fame, obviously, here the other day as well. But Paul Pierce answered the bell. he was a malcontent guy on a bad team, but as soon as you got him the right coach and the right players around him, he was the consummate winner. And, you know, everybody who's talking on this panel right now and listening, you don't need me to tell you any more about Paul Pierce. When I saw Matthew Stafford play last week, I thought, my God, you know, this is a guy who's been waiting for Sean McVay. He's been waiting to play for a real organization on a real team, not one of these black cloud franchises that you see in sports. And wow, if he can stay healthy, you know, you're looking at a team that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and their coach was, you know, considered young Einstein not that long ago. Anybody who had had dinner with Sean McVay was getting a head coach's interview. Look out for the Rams.
I like it. Paul, anything on your end?
Yeah, John, couple things. Let's see. In the game the other night, similar situation to the Patriots. The Raiders were trailing 17-10 in field goal range easily, and they went for it and didn't get it. And I thought that when I was watching the Patriots game the other day that, you know, they kicked the field goal to 17-10 and made it 17-13. I thought they should have gone for it because they were going to be coming back down there again, and even if they didn't get it, they had them pinned down the 20-yard line. You know what I mean? You talk about this big defense. That's what I would have done. That's what I definitely noticed in that particular I guess if I could question the coach, that's one thing I would definitely, I would have gone. You got to go for it sometime and pull it down. Just because you're a good quarterback, he played at Alabama. That's the same thing as playing in the pros, so go for it.
Absolutely, and I just really respect the fact that during the Around the NFL segment, Paul got one more jab in at Bill Belichick. That was swift. Really good stuff. Let's switch gears here to the Boston Red Sox, America's team. What a year it's been for these guys of looking like going into the trade deadline, because we haven't talked in months. The Red Sox were the darlings of this podcast the last time we were on, and in really good shape, first place in the division, a million games on the Yankees going into the trade deadline, and you do pretty much nothing. You get Kyle Schwarber, but he's, you know, hurt for essentially 2 weeks before he can even play a game for you when you pick him up. Other teams go out and make moves and just start winning games, and you can't buy a victory and go in a huge slump. Now we're, how many games are we behind the Rays, Dave? Like nine?
Yeah.
It's nine. Something ridiculous. Ten. And so as of right now, as of this moment, we are statistically out of the wild card spot. In a day, that could switch and you're up a half game, but we are in it right now in a battle for that final wild card spot between the Blue Jays and the Yankees. And, you know, who's going to get home field? Who knows? But we've got some games here. We're going to go through the schedule in a little bit. But, Dave, optimistic that the Sox will even make that wild card game, or pessimistic?
I'm optimistic that they're going to make it. I think they're getting guys back from the DL. And they have an easy schedule, which helps, and I think that matters a lot in baseball. And I do think this team, believe it or not, I think this is not a team of, you know, 10, 15 years, 10 years ago, you know, the fried chicken. I don't think they have guys like that on this team. I think it's more tougher guys. They're still trying to prove themselves. Obviously, you get some of the higher paid guys, but I think they're going to do it. They have the schedule to do it, and if they blow it, it would be pretty bad because they have a really easy schedule, and they've, you know, they started out the season so well, and, you know, we got the real, we're seeing what the real Red Sox are the past couple of months. It's just, you know, they're going to win some games, they're going to lose some games, and, you know, I think in September we're like 8-8 or 8-8, 9-7, something like that. So we're kind of seeing what they are, but we got three against the Orioles, we got three against the Mets, we've got a pretty easy schedule coming up here. And I think they're going to get into that wild card spot, and you know, we'll see from there.
I like it.
Bounce in the first round.
Bounce in the first round. You think we win that game?
I do.
Saying. Yeah. And the way we probably win that game is, Cove, I believe if you were the head coach, this is what you would go with: Evaldi first six innings, inning 7-8, Richards, inning 9, Ottavino. Do you agree?
Wow. That's a lot that you're throwing at me. Number one, I don't know if they're going to make the wild card game, and I certainly don't think they're going to win the wild card game because you don't have a stopper to go out there and just pitch that game. That's first and foremost. Number two, when you're talking about Garrett Richards, I mean, he absolutely needs to be a swingman, long reliever. There's no way that he is a starting pitcher in the American League, and certainly no way he's a starting pitcher in the American League East. He's, you know, he's a meatball artist, but again, he's one of these guys that goes to the bullpen and suddenly can throw 97 miles an hour with some regularity. So I don't, again, I'm not really down though on this team, because I'm going to go back to the beginning of the season and nobody thought they were going to be any good. So for several months, they overachieved. Again, they have no ace. You tell me, somebody on this panel, tell me who are the dominant arms on their whole pitching staff, on their whole pitching staff. They don't have one. Garrett Whitlock almost shit his pants and went blind pitching in Yankee Stadium, and I like Garrett Whitlock.
Dude, are you aware that we have Nathan Eovaldi?
Yes, and believe me, nobody appreciates EO more than I do.
No, that's not true at all.
Okay, guys, I like Nathan Eovaldi, and I certainly appreciate what he did for the 2018 team.
Thanks.
When he became, you know, the de facto eighth inning guy and was unbelievable. He was their most dominant reliever. But I don't see it for this team, and I'm not depressed by that fact because they overachieved all season. Again, their pitching staff is one of the worst in baseball. I don't know, you know, how many people are listening to this podcast that play fantasy baseball, but I promise you there's not a lot of Red Sox that are owned in fantasy baseball. Again, and nobody here needs me to break down Eddie Rodriguez and how maddening he is or anything like that. So this is a bridge year. It's a little similar to 06 when the Red Sox were very good throughout 06, and then they didn't do anything at the deadline. They just kind of stood pat and let the last 2 months run off the calendar the next year that they won the World Series. So I'm not going to say they're going to be 2022 World Series champions, but again, it's just not in the cards for this team, and that's okay, and it's not an indictment of anybody.
Wow, taking the easy way out with only a matter of games to go in the season. It's real sad stuff. I'm of the mind, you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. And at this point, you've positioned yourself where you have a legitimate shot. And if you don't make it at this point, especially with your upcoming schedule, which we're going to get into with Paul, it will be a disappointment. Paul, let's play the numbers here, our favorite segment. I'm going to list off the teams we're playing upcoming, the number of games, and you tell me what the records are going to be in those series. First one, Orioles, three games.
2-1.
Okay. 2-1 against the Orioles. Mets at home, two games.
1-1. We're going to fortunately have a rainout.
1-1. How would a rainout help us?
We won't have to play because the Mets are fighting to get in. They've kind of fallen hard times, but that's a tough matchup for us.
All right.
I'll go 2-1, John.
It's two games. It's a two-game series.
Oh, 1-1. We'll go on.
Okay, 1-1. Yankees at home, three games.
2-1.
Wow. Being very generous. Orioles on the road, three games.
2-1.
2-1. Wow. You talk about optimistic. Nationals to close the season out, three games.
That's a sweep.
3-0. Wow. All right, let's do the math here, Dave. 2-1, 3-2. This is riveting stuff. All right, that's 5-3.
10-4.
Wow. Looks like we're playing at home in that wild card game. Care to elaborate, Paul?
Yeah, one thing. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of Sweet Caroline at home, okay?
I like that.
That's
a good idea.
And I'm going to replace it with Revere's Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, Palisade Park.
What the hell is that?
What the season is a roller coaster. And if you're on the high point at the end of the season, you're going to squeeze into the playoffs. And the Yankees, I believe, play Toronto six times. They haven't done well with them. I see Toronto taking 5 out of 6 from the Yanks, and I think that's going to eliminate them.
Wow.
So we're looking at, in Paul's world, it's Toronto coming to Boston for that wild card game, which would be something, by the way, especially with playoff Springer. He's go ahead, Paul.
And Matt was sacrilegious in saying that Chris Sale is not a major leaguer, because he is. There's your wild card pitcher right there, Matt. Chris Sale.
Yeah, I forgot to throw him in. I guess he's got to take some innings from Richards.
Oh, my God. Don't even start talking to me about Chris Sale. That's like picking the biggest scab and letting it bleed. Chris Sale has never won one big game for the Red Sox. the year that they won the World Series and he was on the roster.
He got the final outs, Matt.
John, I mean, my God, that don't please, please. That would be like if I went to the next Fish concert and like handed Trey guitar picks and me telling you that I'm in Fish now. I mean, John, that's absolutely absurd. This guy broke down in the middle of their 2018 season. He was a liability. Look at what a terrible playoff pitcher he's been. And he's not even that good when he faces good talent. He gives up a bunch of hits. I mean, he's not been impressive since he's come back. And he's kind of as your friend Mike Felger would say, an asshat. This is the same guy that cut up a whole bunch of jerseys in a locker room 5 years ago because he didn't want to wear those. I do not like Chris Sale at all. I still don't like that trade. And no, thank you. I mean, this guy is not a big game pitcher at all.
Well, especially when you miss your first game start against the Yankees in the playoffs because you have an infection from your belly button ring. That's tough to get in the category of elite when you've got injuries like that happening.
Don't forget when he pitched against the Astros 4 years ago and he got bombed in that game too. And that was the year that he's, oh my God, he's getting all these strikeouts. Give me a break. I mean, this guy is so overrated. It's unbelievable. It is so sickening to think that in our town recently we've seen Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, and 2007 Josh Beckett, and people think that this guy's an ace. It's unbelievable.
I mean, really good stuff. A way to bring the fire at the end of the Red Sox segment after going pretty soft on them at the beginning.
Wake me from the dead.
my opinion on the Red Sox is that we barely make it and have to go to Toronto. And that's just not going to be enough. It's going to be one of those classic wild card games, which have been a lot of which have been awesome. It's going to be one of those 10-9 losses where it just gets off the rails and it's just back and forth, absolute tennis match, and you just don't have enough at the end of the day. And they have George Springer, and you don't. Switching gears here,
and they have an ace. They have Ryu, who's a stud.
Yeah. Well said. Let's go to the Celtics. Whoa, I mean, I can't believe this is on me that we didn't have a welcome home episode that could have lasted easily 2 hours. It could have been a Scorsese film of just welcoming Al back to the city of Boston, hopefully for many more years to come. I know this was, a contract move and we had to move some money around and we just happened to get Al back. But I think this is going to be a huge part of this team's success, this young core's success of having a nice father figure back is to bridge the gap of the new coach, which we haven't talked about, and I'm Udoka. Very excited for that. So much that was just up in the air with I don't even know if we were able to talk about Stevens and Udoka the last time we had an episode, but a lot going on there. Marcus Smart and Bob Williams getting extended, signing players like Dennis Schroeder, Al Horford, obviously, and Josh Richardson. So much going on with the Celtics, and you could easily say this team is middle of the pack and can't compete with the Brooklyn Nets and others, but I think what we've done is created a stronger version of the Celtics that were so lovable 5 years ago with a little bit more talent, without all the drama of Kyrie and everything else that was such a huge distraction, and dealing with Gordon Hayward. Is he hurt? Is he not? Do people get along with him? So I think this team is going to be sneaky good and is going to give the Bucks and the Nets a run for their money. I'm really excited. Things could turn 10 games into the season. I could be a pessimist like I usually am with the Celtics, but very optimistic with this team. Sorry for going so long. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I agree with you, John. I mean, it's a crazy offseason just with Danny Ainge leaving alone, because he has done so much with this team.
One year championship
and got rid of the big three and started this whole rebuild and got the Nets picks, got Jaylen Brown, got Tatum, got Kyrie, all these different things he did, and then retires that we knew it was coming, but not this year with his health issues. And then Brad Stevens takes the keys, something that he is so unfamiliar with. I mean, he was a college coach just, I don't know how many years ago that was, but it was pretty recent. And he's running probably one of the more high-profile organizations in the NBA.
In sports,
and he goes out and makes all these big moves this offseason. I mean, you have the key things here is you have Tatum, who now is, I think, has proved himself as a bona fide star in the NBA, arguably a top 10 player in the NBA, which is huge. You have Jaylen Brown coming back from injury. You got rid of some riffraff with Kemba. You know, was he going to be – there was – I felt bad for the Kemba era in Boston just because there was too much weight in his shoulders. He was never going to live up to what people wanted him to live up. But he's not here, and that's –
shoulders. He was making a bankload of money, and he came in, and you know, oh my god.
Yeah, no, but it wasn't that. The Celtics fans had an unrealistic expectation for him, and we all know that. Yeah, he got a ton of money, but everyone in the NBA is making a ton of money. So, and you know, it's good, and I like the offseason moves they made. I mean, they got three guys. I think Schroeder's going to help them a ton in the backcourt, and he's a young player that's looking for a contract, so that's going to help. I agree, John. I'm excited.
If you thought Shark and the Dog's Al Horford reunion episode would have been long, you don't even want to know how long Matt's Danny Ainge funeral episode would have been. That would have been a 3-hour saga. Paul, anything on the Celts going into the season?
There's just so many moving parts, John. I think you have to wait to see how it unfolds. I am happy that they haven't given up 12 players for Bradley Beal because I really don't want anything to do with him.
Yep.
I really don't. I don't want Damian Lillard. I don't want C.J. McCollum. All these, you know, you have to give up 12 draft picks and, you know, your firstborn and all these things. It's not going to change the team. Just play with who you have and figure out what you have and make changes as you go along.
Well said. Very, very safe opinion there. Cove, what do you got?
Well, a lot of things. First of all, I was so surprised by the Stevens to the front office thing, and it felt like, you know, Brad, we like you, but you really weren't getting through to these guys, so we're going to give you a chance to, you know, kind of live up to the money that we're paying you right now because we don't want to pay you to go away and coach UCLA or something like that. But when I've seen his approach to free agency – and just team building, it makes me really think that Danny was legitimate when he said that Brad was born for this. And you guys went through the signings. I love the extensions of Smart and Bob Williams. Those were two of my glue guys, two guys I thought that were just, you know, so essential to the success of this team. And you really hope that just with the era that you're living in now, a guy like Iman Udoka, who's, you know, played with big stars before, has been on a championship team, he's the guy that can really help take JB and JT to the next level. I'm with Paul. You don't need to go out there and trade for a bunch of guys. And John, I'm, you know, as optimistic as anybody on this panel. I think you're a finals contender with this team. You know, unless somebody goes south or there's a big injury or, you know, one of those variables, you're an absolute finals contender. That was the, how can I say that? That was the ultimate cash out year for the Bucks. I cannot see them winning again. I know everybody likes Giannis. I know everybody likes Middleton, but this is not a dynasty in the making or anything along those lines. Plus Giannis is not necessarily 23 years old either. So, again, I love this team. You're a finals contender. I'm excited about the coaching. I'm excited about the direction. And I'm excited about having fans in that building again. When you have one of the elite home court advantages in a league where home court really means a lot, you saw what it meant in Cleveland for LeBron and out here up in Golden State with Roracle and all that kind of stuff, you're going to be primed. You're going to be ready to roll. And I think, obviously, a new coach and a new voice in there is so key. Remember what Larry Bird said. The reason he stopped coaching after 3 seasons is because everybody stops listening to you after 3 seasons.
Yeah, it's a good point. And that home ice, home court advantage is gone at the Garden because the color of the seats. There's no more color in the building, so it's a very depressing place for a home team to win a game. You saw it with the Bruins in that playoff series.
It might be the masks. The fans.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is. What was I going to say, Dave, regarding the Celtics? I think we're good on the Celtics. The last thing I'll say on the Celtics is Cove has been saying this for years with JT and JB about them being, you know, trying to compare them to Clay and Steph and what the Warriors are trying to build and draft from within. And I've always talked about how, you know, crazy that is. You need someone else to come in free agency. And now that we're at a point where we couldn't make a lot of huge splashes in free agency, but we have seen those two make such a big leap, Tatum specifically, this is the year where you can push your chips to the middle of the table and go, Tatum is really going to take a leap, and his confidence, especially along with his skill, and this could be a big year for the Celtics if everything starts to click, especially if things work well with the coach to start the season and they get things rolling. Let's switch over to the Bruins. Dave, I have nothing on the Bruins. Take it away.
If you're a Bruins fan, it's going to be if you're a Bruins fan looking from the outside in, and you don't really follow them in the offseason, just watch them during the season, it's going to be a totally different team. No David Krejci, no Tuukka Rask, two guys that have been on the team for, David Krejci since forever. We watched him grow up, and now he's gone, and Tuukka, same way. We saw him, but he had a tough run in Boston. There was, tough love for the most part, and he's not going to be on the team. You went out, you spent a lot of money in free agency, which is something the Bruins don't do. They got a goalie for $5 million a year. They got, some bottom line depth. They got some top four defensemen. It's going to be a different team this year. And I think, I like what they're doing with the reshape and the rebuild. And I think there's going to be some more young guys in the lineup this year with Studnicka and potentially Lauko too, and Trent Frederick. So you're going to see those guys, and you got a bunch of free agents. You get Foligno, Forbort. You re-signed the kid from Ottawa. I forget, blanket on the name, from the playoffs, but whatever. That's all I got in the Bruins.
Well said. And Rask, the opinion on Rask, I hope that time heals the wound of how amazing he was as a Bruin. Yes, you can point to three specific areas where it was catastrophic, but overall, an amazing run as a goaltender. And even one of those points, I will 100% point to the other players that he failed. They failed him in Game 7 against the Blues. He did everything to get you to that game, and you screwed him. And he was not the reason you lost that game, that series. The Blackhawks, huge collapse. What happened against the Flyers? You can blame other things, but overall, he should be getting as much, if not more, love than what Henrik Lundqvist is getting. Like that guy's run was what an amazing goaltender, but he also put up a complete goose egg. Yeah. So on the whole, Rask should be getting way more praise. It's just tough to live in the shadow of Tim Thomas, who came out of nowhere and had one of the best runs a goaltender could possibly have, and that's where it set the standard for goaltenders in Boston. If Tim Thomas never comes around, there would be a gold statue for Tuukka Rask, and I hold out hope that he might even come back this season.
Yeah, he could.
That's quite possible. I said I had nothing on the Bruins. That's what I had on the Bruins. Paul, anything there?
Yeah, John, just one thing on the New Jersey Devils. If you own the Devils, you look at your stat sheet and you see who your players are and what you're paying them. Can you imagine owning the team and seeing that you owe Dougie Hamilton $9 million every year for 7 years? What made it even better is that I think it's Jimmy Vesey from the Rangers. Remember, he refused to play for, I think that's his name.
Yep.
He refused to play for Nashville. He went to the Rangers, and now he's on the Devils. I know I said this before when I was only joking about, but really, if this were soccer, the Devils would join the Baltimore Orioles, and they'd be in a new league because Dougie Hamilton making $9 million, I just can't understand it. I'm sorry.
Was that like your roundabout way of talking about the Bruins, just naming former Bruins and even a player that didn't want to come to the Bruins?
They had their shoot-around the other day with Patrice Bergeron. He's a tremendous player, but they don't have enough players, John. You look at Florida and Carolina. Those teams are much better than the Bruins. They have good young players. When I look at those teams, I'm saying, I hope to God the Bruins don't play them in the playoffs. They're not going to get out of the first round.
Good stuff. Cove, anything to wrap us up here with the Bees?
Well, thank God you re-signed Taylor Hall, because David Krejci's not there anymore, as the kid Nards pointed out, and Patrice Bergeron's getting older, much older, and what you needed to do, because you still have such a unique young core there, so talented, you needed to sign a guy like Taylor Hall, who is now a veteran player, because, again, you're trying to have something of a veteran core and keep augmenting with these young guys, and who better to look up to than a guy like Taylor Hall, who can, hopefully take that Bergeron mantle of your steady veteran. And I just want to see Taylor Hall with a full season in Boston too. So I'm so excited about that, and I have high hopes for the Bruins to start the season. When we do a Big B's preview episode, we'll just knock them dead.
Yeah. Well said. Good wrap up there. Totally forgot about Hall there.
Totally forgot about significant free agent signing.
Well, I've been a little preoccupied with reunions for the Boston Celtics that I haven't been paying attention to the other, you know, people coming back to the Garden.
You're hanging on all those IT rumors. Oh my God, I heard IT's going to be the vice president or this or I mean, my God, all these rumors about IT. I put on Twitter today that they're like Elvis sightings in the 80s. Paul probably remembers in the 80s. Everybody saw Elvis somewhere at a truck stop or at a diner, something like that. Everybody's looking in. IT's going to back up. He's going to come back to the Celtics. Please make this happen. Bring Isaiah Thomas back. All this kind of stuff. He's still out of work. He has not played in the NBA in 4 years.
I mean, the king of rock and roll can't hold a candle to the king of the fourth. I'm glad you made the comparison, Cole.
I just think of them hand in hand all the time.
Paul, any miscellaneous items besides the New Jersey Devils that you wanted to get to?
I had to get that off my chest. I heard today the NHL has over 98% of its players vaccinated. I think that's fantastic because we've seen the local team in the Back Bay has struggled mightily. They're not even 85%, I believe. And that has just, you know, if that hadn't happened, they're on a pace to win over 100 games. So I think that's very important for the league. And I wish, you know, the NFL has done a fine job with it. I wish the other two leagues would pay the same attention to it because I think it's so important to have everybody vaccinated and because it had to be difficult the last 2 years to be on the road all the time.
Definitely. Dave, any miscellaneous items you wanted to wrap things up here with?
Nope.
Week two, Patriots Jets. It is, you know, it's happened before, early matchup against the Jets, and this used to be an automatic in the Patriots of old. A lot of questions surrounding Bill Belichick, not a ton surrounding Mac Jones. So the rookie quarterback, the fact that the target is not on his back, I would say is a victory, but people are staring at Bill Belichick and they're saying, if this keeps going on, it wasn't you. It was all Tom, especially if that guy wins another one this season. And he's won 10 of his last 10 games, starting off the season 1-0 on Thursday night when they were doing the banner raising down there in Tampa Bay. I miss him just as much as all you do. So I'm rooting for Bill. I really am. And it's great to see that Mac is playing well. But this game is really important because, like I said, Dave, we've got the Saints. We've got the Cowboys. We got the Bucks coming up. A few other good ones after that. It's not an easy schedule, especially when you're dropping divisional round games, divisional team games against the Dolphins. So big game on Sunday. Celtics right around the corner. I think we got 19 days until they play a game. Don't know what the count is on the Bruins. And the Red Sox, at Paul's pace, we're going to be hosting that wild card game before you know it. And that'll be a sight to behold. I hope they make it there because Matt's guy's Chris Sale is going to be on the mound. And it'll be great. And that is it for our return to Shark and the Dog. One final thing. Just wanted to give a quick RIP to Jimmy Hayes, a tough loss to the Boston community, the Boston hockey community. The man lived the Boston hockey kid's dream of going to play at a Boston college, playing specifically at Boston College, winning a national championship, and then making it to the NHL and playing for your hometown team. And had a good career, tough run in Boston, but very tough loss for the Boston hockey community. Rest in peace to Matt's guy, Charlie Watts, and comedian Norm MacDonald. Go back and watch his host of the ESPYs in 1994, right after the OJ verdict.
John, I'm sorry, I never got to do my parting shots. I had three really quick ones for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, number one for Paul. Wayne Gretzky's last 30 plus goal season came 27 years ago. He was 33 years old. And when you're making comparisons to Tom Brady, who's 44 years old, and then Wayne Gretzky never won another Stanley Cup without Curry or Messier or Grand Fjord. He, after leaving Edmonton, he won exactly one Stanley Cup Finals game, and that was in 1993. So again, I love Wayne as much as anybody, but to compare him to Tom Brady is like comparing Led Zeppelin to the Beatles, because you compare anybody to the Beatles and you're starting to discredit them. And I mean, why would you want to discredit Led Zeppelin? Number two, very interesting story to follow. The NBA is not requiring the COVID vaccine. Again, talk amongst yourselves. Very interesting. And I think that was it. I didn't have any other final parting shots. I definitely wanted to throw those stats out there about the great one. And also just interesting that the NBA is you know, taking a big detour from, you know, really what the other professional sports leagues are doing.
Good stuff all around.
John?
Paul?
John, one quick thing. I hope Matt has a landscaping company, because during this quarantine of Chris Sale, the Red Sox got a company to build him a pitching mound in his backyard so he could keep his arm fresh. So it's got to come down because he's off the list.
I like it. That's how he was so refreshed, and why he's going to be so primed for that wild card game at home in a few weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning back in. I'm your host, John Murphy. I don't think I said that at the top. Dave, Paul, Matt, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we're talking next week and not in 6 months like we did last time. Dig it.